Hello, welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, helping people with cancer to find out about and use integrative medicine to support their recovery. In today's show, I'm going to be spotlighting two of the services that Yes to Life offers that provide connection and support through what is well known to be a hugely challenging and isolating experience, cancer and cancer treatment. I'm speaking to two of our team, Shafia Begum, who runs the peer-to-peer scheme, and Sarah Spinks, who's in charge of the Wigwam Support Groups program. Hi, Shafia and Sarah. A big welcome to the Yes to Life show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Robin. It's lovely to be here.
So, this is a bit of an in-house show today, focusing on two of the services that Yes to Life offers to help people connect with other like-minded people with cancer. So, today we're going to be speaking about the Wigwam Support Group Scheme and the Peer-to-Peer Support Scheme, one of which you are each running. So, just to get the ball rolling, I thought I'd ask you both to set out your stall with a very brief summary of why you think someone listening might want to consider joining the service that you run. So, Shafia, maybe we start with you. Give us your elevator pitch for the peer-to-peer scheme.
Okay, I think people should join the peer-to-peer scheme because it's very unique in the fact that you'll be matched with somebody who has had a previous cancer diagnosis. And so they really can be empathetic and understanding to the most recent the recent diagnosis that the mentee would have received. It's a safe space. The mentors are they're trained. They get regular supervision. They're part of the Yes to Life family. So even if you decide that the mentoring scheme might not be for you, or you come to the end of your 12-week session, then they can signpost you onto another service that is going to be just perfect for you. It can be a lonely and frightening place where you may not want to share your fears and your worries with your family and friends, even if you do have a very strong network. But to talk to somebody who knows what you're going through, but may not be where you may not have to worry about their reaction to your diagnosis, is really important. And that's why we set the scheme up. And it's the feedback that we've heard the most from those who are using the service.
Fantastic. Okay, great. And Sarah, what's your elevated pitch for the Wigwam Support Group Scheme?
Fantastic, Robin. Thank you. The interesting question for me with the Wigwam Support Group is how does that differ from other support groups that may be out there as well? Because, of course, it offers that safe and nurturing space to all come together and discuss the shared experience. And the Wigwam groups in particular offer that space for you to, I suppose, ponder and process and discuss your desired approach. I think certainly from my own experience, when there are some wonderful groups out there, there's a more sort of narrow approach with traditional medicine and that may be considered. But with the Wigwammer group, we're very much discussing what we can do as well in terms of lifestyle and behavioral and complementary approaches in order to support the journey and navigate it. And I think that can create an awful lot of overwhelm in people. It certainly did for myself. And to be able to process that with others going through the same, away from the emotions either created by or for our family members and friends, can be incredibly powerful, just to create that space for us to sort of go through what those options might be and navigate our own approach. I think reducing that overwhelm can be very sort of helpful to health and healing in itself.
So a certain amount of overlap there clearly between the two schemes. Okay, so thanks. So before we dig into the detail of the schemes, it'd be lovely to hear a little bit about your own backgrounds and why you're involved in this particular work with this particular charity, Yes to Life. So Sarah, do you want to tell us a little bit?
Yeah, it was 5 years ago I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And of course, at that first diagnosis, I didn't know what stage or grade or anything really about the cancer that I was about to experience. I've always been interested in health. I've been plagued with sort of chronic health conditions and intolerances and niggles my whole life. And I felt that I was fairly on top of it. But obviously, a cancer diagnosis catapulted me into a new, I suppose, space of inquiry. I've got a bit of a curious mind. Some might say I'm a bit over analytical, but thankfully for that, having been told not to do any research by my care team, which was a bit surprising for me. I really started to dig in to a lot of information, and the Yes to Life book was one of the first resources that I came upon, thankfully, which is obviously an absolute wealth of information of all the things that we can do to support ourselves, both in body with diet and movement, exercise, sleep, for example. But I hadn't been aware of the emotional and behavioral aspects that can obviously influence health. So it really triggered my interest in that. I ended up working with an integrative doctor and training with her in holistic health. I then moved into helping others with mentoring and then coaching. I then discovered functional medicine and then started to train in that as well and qualified as a functional medicine coach. And it's just taken me along this beautiful journey of the last 5 years that now has thankfully brought me back to Yes to Life and being able to support capacity. I do want to mention one thing is that I was in the end diagnosed with a stage one cancer. And somebody in one of the Wigwam cafes recently put it very succinctly that she hadn't approached us before because she didn't feel she deserved.
Wow, really?
To use resources. And I must admit, I did feel a lot about that way myself. Therefore, I was fine using paid resources like the wonderful conferences or a book, but I didn't actually take advantage of some of the resources in terms of support groups and peer-to-peer. Obviously, this was, they came about slightly after my diagnosis as well.
Yeah,
I found that really interesting because obviously we're there for everybody, and that stage of the journey has become very interesting to me as well with regards to what stage you are, not just whether, you know, stage one up to stage four, but equally what stage you are on your journey, whether it's pre-treatment, during treatment and navigating that, or what happens after that. And I think we need support at all of those stages.
Really interesting points. I hope anybody listening who's in that position pricks up their ears and maybe thinks about joining one of the groups. A little plug in there for our book. Thank you very much. The Cancer Revolution. If anybody's interested in getting a copy, go to our website and look out a copy. Shafia.
I was drawn to Yes to Life for two different reasons. One, I am really passionate about working with volunteers. I love working with volunteers, and I have done for many years. And so the peer project working with volunteers was definitely right up my street, and that's probably the main reason. I think the second reason was, so back in, I think, 1999, I started working at the Nutri Centre, which was just underneath the Hell Clinic.
I remember it, yeah.
Yeah, so I worked there and I had no idea about alternative health or integrative medicine or holistic medicine or anything like that. And so I was in this world where I took a gap year from after my A-levels, and I worked in this field, and I was blown away, truly. I was blown away with the kind of stories that I heard from the people coming in who were using supplements or using alternative practitioners, sometimes alongside orthodox medicine, sometimes not. And I was fascinated by it. And then it led me to do nutritional therapy at Westminster Uni, which was quite new at the time. They had their own clinic.
Yes.
Situated on site. And so as a practitioner in training, we had access to those clinics and to actual patients, and we would watch via video qualified practitioners. So it was just really fascinating. And so I was surrounded by students who were doing herbal medicine and homeopathy and acupuncture, and for me this was brand new, and I think I was 19 at the time, and I think it just really changed my life in a way that it's made me more appreciative of other factors that contribute to our well-being. And I'm just so grateful for that experience, actually, because otherwise I'm not sure how else or where else I would have gained so much knowledge. And so it's definitely a part of my everyday life. And it's, I try to kind of share that with family and friends. I really like the fact that, I guess, Yes to Life is very kind of clued on with that side of health that is sometimes ignored. So yeah, both of my kind of interests combined in one charity has been
great.
Has been really nice.
Very nice. Well, that growing awareness of the other factors that influence health and well-being is sort of society-wide, I feel. You've been experiencing that along with everybody else. It seems like it's really changed dramatically in the last few years, particularly through COVID. And the whole area of well-being and looking after yourself and the kind of relationship with nature and all that kind of thing, which nobody even thought about it before, has become front and centre. So I'm very pleased about that, of course, because that's the kind of stuff we've been banging on about forever. So,
wow.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, so I wonder if both of you could talk about the particular issues that people with cancer face, which you think these particular services can help address. So either of you just chime in with your thoughts on that.
I think for the peer-to-peer product, the thing that I hear the most is loneliness, fear, not wanting to worry, you know, their family and loved ones with the diagnosis. I think, and also knowledge, not knowing where to go, what's out there, what could work, what has somebody else tried that maybe their doctors aren't recommending that could make a difference. I think those are the key themes that I see when people are requesting peer-to-peer support.
Mm. How about you, Sarah?
It's very similar, actually, to you, Shafia, that loneliness, that isolation of a different journey, I suppose, with those taking an integrative approach, because most of the people in our groups are doing a combination of the traditional orthodox medicine and the complementary approaches. And I think, you know, I've mentioned before that can create an awful lot of overwhelm, but I think it's the disconnect between both of them at the moment that causes people the most concern. And I think when we are feeling more vulnerable going through that cancer journey, for want of a word, that vulnerability can create an awful lot of fear, or more fear than we might have anyway with the diagnosis. And when we're getting one opinion given by, well, I'll use the terminology mainstream medicine, which can be very different from an integrative approach or somebody more proficient in integrative medicine or integrative oncology, that can cause a lot of confusion for people. And I don't think it's because sort of mainstream or our anti, you know, us looking after ourselves. You said yourself, Robin, the advances in health and that education at the moment about how we can support ourselves, sort of all mind, body and spirit, is truly out there at the moment. But it's almost like we're still falling in between two stools of an illness pandemic or a disease pandemic and this health trend. And it's how do we navigate that? How do we bring it together in order that we can bring that into our daily lives with sort of self-management strategies and taking the pressure off of us? You know, a lot of people have moved from very busy lives and think, okay, this cancer diagnosis has given me permission to look at my health.
Brilliant.
And we move into just another long to-do list. You know, meditation, I must do yoga, I must drink my juice, I must do this, I must try to stop my thoughts. Oh no, I'm stressing. I know that stress isn't good for me. And we move into a different state of stress to before. So it's providing sort of the reflection to that. I think when we can see it in others, it's much easier than seeing it in ourselves. And that's a real true benefit of the group. Because when we hear somebody else say what we're feeling or experiencing it, I think that's where the power really lies. And also in giving that support to others really enables us to seek our own answers of what can help ourselves too. And also it gives the feeling of well-being when we're there for other people as well. But that would be, I think, that.
Well, lots of things. Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, I mentioned at the beginning there's a bit of overlap in the way you spoke about both these services, even though they're different services. Now, I wonder if there's a sort of cross-fertilisation going on between them. Do people move from one to the other or even use both?
Yes, definitely. I've had at least one mentee who's had a couple of sessions with a mentor and then heard about the groups and then decided that the group was the support that she would prefer. So there's definitely been overlap that I know of at least twice. To be honest, that's kind of the aim anyway, is that because the peer-to-peer support is obviously quite intensive and it's meant to be short-term, it's ideally a 12-week program. And beyond that, we would like it if the mentee still felt like they needed support, that the groups are an ideal setting for that. Yes, so there is definitely cross-fertilisation.
That's what I said, yeah.
To start with as well, people can feel a little bit intimidated by the group scenario, that personally, and therefore an introduction to receiving support, because sometimes it's difficult for us, one, to ask for support, and then two, to receive it.
Uh-huh.
But that on a one-to-one basis can be incredibly nurturing and just what's needed. And then that expansion into the group scenario, once we, you know, I suppose start to get our confidence a little bit, can be very helpful. But equally, I have people in the groups who I don't think have used the one-to-one mentorship. It's certainly something that's discussed within the groups as well, of how helpful that can be,
right,
as well as well-being sessions that do quite a lot of cross-fertilization with other services.
Yeah, right. Okay, fantastic. Now, I'd like to sort of dive into each of the services a bit now. I thought I'd start with the wigwam groups. Sarah, can you start out by telling us the basics, like where they meet, how often, how many people are in them, how many groups there are, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, we have 7 groups. There, we have around 4 online, two in the making. And sort of an equal number in person. They tend to be, they certainly take place every month. My group is every other week, and there's a couple of other online groups that are running every other week. There are different times, sort of, and evening. Each group tends to have around 8 people in it. We feel that that's sort of the maximum number in order that everybody can get heard and everybody sort of feels that, you know, we've create friendships within these groups. I started volunteering as a group facilitator a year ago in January, and I think that really influences how the groups evolve. So each group will have somebody who nurtures it, who runs it, and that's obviously run on a volunteer basis. The people who are facilitators typically have had an experience with cancer, realize the power in the group, and therefore have said, look, I'd love to sort of get involved and do this as well. So at the moment, we have a couple of our original groups in Stroud. We're developing one in Hull and one down in Totnes. We have one up in Scotland, which is just lovely for the people up there. And the online groups, obviously, we have people distributed.
Fair.
At the UK, but also a couple of international members as well.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. So you've already said what you feel is kind of unique about the wigwam groups in terms of the fact that they're kind of looking at things from an integrative perspective, which is the angle of the charity. Obviously, this is what we're about. And so it's definitely inclusive from that point of view, isn't it? In terms of people are allowed to look outside the box, basically, comfortably, and are supported in doing that. So you just said you're actually a group facilitator yourself, which is interesting. And did you actually set up this group?
No, I didn't set it up. The way that Wigwam operates is we run something called a Wigwam Cafe.
Okay.
A couple of times a month, and it's basically a meeting of people via Zoom, people who have registered their interest in joining a Wigwam group. And what we do to start with is I now run the Wigwam Cafe, and we've got one this afternoon. And
okay.
People come along to that, and it just gives that experience, albeit online, to connect, to hear somebody else's story, to understand what it's like to share, I suppose, and to feel what it's like in that nurturing space. And then after that, typically we can allocate people to groups if there is space. My group came about because there were quite a number of people looking for a group at that time. The Wigwam coordinator at the time, Philip, then ran the group for a little bit, and I participated in it, and then I was able to take the group forward after that. And that's typically how it's worked. So anybody who is either within a group now or anybody who's interested in leading a group, we obviously provide that support and sort of training and guide.
Right. Yeah. So I wonder, you know, it sounds as though each group's kind of, it has its own character, they're kind of individual. I'd just be interested to hear just a little bit for it. An example about yours, what the character of yours, the kind of things you do, the sort of topics you explore.
Yeah, lovely. Well, typically, and I think this goes for some of the other groups as well, we open with a meditation or a breath work just to get people into the space and to release our day, as it were, all the stresses that we're dealing with. I have four ladies within my group who have been there with me over the year. And then there's been a couple of times where we've welcomed two new people. And then more recently, we've had another two new people join us as well. Friendships have certainly been built within that group. And what's truly lovely is just recently when we welcomed two new members, I was asking the other members to introduce themselves and a little bit about their story. And several of the members within the group are dealing with stage four diagnoses. And this lady, she was just saying, well, I've been diagnosed with terminal cancer and I'm navigating my way and I'm going through treatment. She said, and joining Yes to Life in the group, she said, it's just been fantastic, really. It's like, and this is what I want to highlight about the groups, is that yes, we are navigating such challenging circumstances with a cancer diagnosis, but we really celebrate the positives within that as well, because of course there are very many. And that's very apparent in the group. And therefore, there is this feeling of hope within it. We typically, everybody gets to share what's going on for them. Everybody gets to ask if they want the opinions of others. We have a set of guidelines within Wigwam, which is very sort of stringent about, you know, we don't recommend, we don't provide, you know, direction in that. In that way, we do talk about our own personal experience, as well as obviously able to share the resources of Yes to Life that are evidence-based, but we do have strict guidelines. But within that, everybody can share their experience and everybody else gets the chance to say, well, I've tried this or I've tried that. And it really gives them, it gives people hope and uplift. And many people at the end of it say they just do feel much better. Conversely to that, I had a lady recently who said she didn't know whether she could come to the group because she was feeling quite low and she didn't want to bring the group down. And that was really interesting because we can, you know, lift each other up, but equally, of course, we're there to support each other. There are enormous challenges to navigate and that's what the group's there for equally. So thankfully she came along and it very much helped.
That's fantastic.
Occasionally, yes, if we get time after we've discussed what's going on for us, we will bring in a topic. So we have discussed things like nutrition 1 week or supplements another, and other things that we can support ourselves. So that's sort of typical. And even during our conversation, books that we've read or doctors we've heard of do come up.
But that's all decided by the group, actually, which direction you get.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it could vary a lot between one group and another one.
Once.
Yeah, interesting. So, but importantly, as you said there, stops short of giving anyone advice or telling anybody what they ought to be doing. So much like the rest of Yes Life, of course. So you mentioned they're both in-person and online groups, so potentially there's a group for anyone in the UK there, but what if nothing quite fits? Just say someone's got a particular topic they want a group to focus on and there isn't one, or they'd really prefer to meet in person but there isn't a group nearby. What can they do?
Well, at the moment, we're obviously offering, we have the peer support if there's something that doesn't quite fit. And I think that's where that comes in very beautifully. If somebody really wants to speak to somebody or to, you know, have that mentoring experience. What we are obviously trying to encourage is that if we have real advocates for Yes to Life who, you know, have a voice and want to explain how Yes to Life has supported them and create a group themselves, then obviously that we're very much there to support anybody who would like to create a group in their area. And we're creating something at the moment called the Local Ambassadors Scheme, which then has individuals all around the country who are advocates and a voice of Yes to Life, and a sort of helping people navigate them to the right support within the charity. But also hopefully that then, you know, with the butterfly effect, that we'll reach more people who then can come together as a group.
Mm, great. So if somebody's got that kind of pioneering mentality and thinks they could set one up, that will help them to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Does that also apply to online groups?
Online groups too, yes. We've got a couple of people at the moment who are very interested in facilitation. They've used the Yes to Life resources over the last few years, been to every conference, you know, the
right.
Yes to Life fans. And
great.
Now feel confident enough with to put themselves forward for facilitation. And I think that's an interesting point, Robin, because myself as well, I think looking back, I was perfectly capable of facilitating a group for Yes to Life. But I felt that so many others would either be doing it, or even with the calls to action on social media, there was something that prevented me from doing it. And I think that was my own inner mind talk, you know, was I able to do it? You know, it feels a huge responsibility.
Okay.
But actually it's sitting there with a group of friends, a group of other humans
yeah.
who've had a shared experience.
Yeah.
And I'd encourage anybody who feels they're able to help Yes to Life in that way to sort of get in touch.
Brilliant. And also, though, if you happen to got a friend who's also interested, you could share the responsibility between you, maybe.
Yes, yes. Most groups have sort of a wingman.
Right.
Somebody else who would happily do that as well. And a lot of groups, if they've been, you know, involved for a long time now, wouldn't even particularly have one facilitator. It's just somebody to open the Zoom call if it's online, for example.
Right.
It's sort of very balanced within the group.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks for that. Now maybe we could hear a bit more about the peer-to-peer scheme. Sheffy, there's a simple kind of principle at work here, you know, connecting people with shared experience to provide support. But who are the people that a new applicant gets connected to? Are they specially trained? Is there any kind of matching process going on?
Yes, there is. So the mentors are trained. They go through a training. I think it's 5 hours of online training on various different topics, but things that include things like boundaries and kind of safeguarding and that kind of thing. They also have a group induction with myself where they learn more about Yes to Life and how they can identify what needs, you know, a mentee might come with and what services we have that they might think about signposting them onto. And the mentors, they also have sessions with me, supervision sessions with me, because obviously we recognize that our mentors are also have had previous cancer diagnoses. Some are living with cancer still, and so it's important that they get
right.
the support from us as well. In terms of the matching, really, I think that we try to match as closely as possible with the kind of point of the cancer, where the cancer origination point in the body, as much as we can. But where we can't, we will try to match on other things like gender and age. The sessions are online, and unfortunately I don't sit in the sessions because obviously that relationship is very important between the mentor and mentee, so I don't actually know
yeah.
what gets discussed. The only way, the way I evaluate is kind of afterwards. It's obviously talking to the mentor, and after the session between both, when I organize the next session between the two, I will ask, how did that session go? Was it a positive experience for you? And it's always been yes. So I know that the training that we're doing is working. I think the only time where we're very lucky that we work with another organization in America that has been going on, I think, for 35 years. And they do, obviously, they're geographically much bigger. And so, for example, I think I did have a male mentee who was very specific about the kind of person he wanted to be matched with, as in gender and treatment plan, which I wasn't able to match. But I was able to refer to our partner organization, and they did find somebody pretty close, not exactly, but close enough, I think. And so I like to feel that even if I haven't been able to match somebody, that there is a resource that we can use that hopefully will find somebody, even though it's based, this mentor would be based in the States. But I'm glad that resource is there.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so we got a phone stroke internet-based service, meaning location isn't any sort of issue, as you just pointed out. So how often do people do calls, and how long do they tend to be?
They're usually an hour, and they're every week. And we say that the sessions, you can do them in blocks of 12, whether that's once a month or once a week, or the pace is set by the mentee and to a certain degree the mentor. And after the 12 weeks, we would review if the mentee felt like they needed more. That's a conversation that we would have with myself and the mentor to see if that's, because really what we don't want is kind of dependency. The whole point of the program is that mentees feel confident to seek maybe other services within their locality or other services within Yes to Life, so their kind of well-being. So yes, 12-week sessions, but sometimes we find that 12 weeks is not always needed. Mm. Sometimes it can be sooner, where 3 weeks and that person feels ready. So 12, but I mean, you know, there's no kind of, you have to stick to the 12 weeks. If they feel like we've had where people have left earlier, they've either moved on to the groups or they've decided that the information that they needed or the support they needed, they had gained that fairly quickly. Some mentees have very specific questions, so they'll want to know, and where I've been able to match closely in terms of treatment plans, they really just have questions about, you know, what did that do? How did it work? What were the side effects? How successful was it? What did the mentor find? And so those sessions are sometimes less, you know, less than three. Yeah. And they'll go off and they'll go and do their own thing. But that's okay. You know, the mentor scheme is designed for the mentees to feel confident and feel like they can take ownership of their diagnosis and, you know, try other things and do other things and be part of other things. And if that's worked in one session, then that's
job done.
you know, that's great. Job done.
Absolutely right. And do people always stay with the same mentor?
Yes, they do. Yeah. So far, they have. Right. Yeah. So
they
far,
could change.
The matching process has been good.
They could change. Yeah. Okay. It shows it's working well. Sarah was saying there's a kind of ground rules for the groups to keep them safe and ensure they run smoothly. You've got a similar kind of ground rules, I imagine, yeah?
Yes. So the training, part of the training covers, you know, obviously do not recommend any kind of health treatment that you may have had just because it's, you know, may have worked for you, it may not work for this person. And none of the mentors are medical professionals or therapists. And so we don't, the mentors are encouraged not to advise on any form of treatment, be it orthodox or anything else. They're allowed to share their own journey. They're allowed to share their own, you know, treatment that they had, what worked for them and what didn't work for them. But, you know, everybody's an individual, and so we can't impose our own kind of beliefs onto the beneficiaries, onto the mentees. And that's very important because it takes away the fact that actually the scheme is set up to allow somebody to feel confident enough to make their own decisions without somebody telling them. So it would kind of defeat the purpose if the mentor then took on that role.
It's a discipline always keeping to that, but a very, very important one in order that people, really do have the freedom to make up their own minds and don't feel kind of pushed in any direction. Yeah, very good. Okay, so I've got something I want to ask both of you. Now, it's well known that in integrative medicine, it's heavily weighted in terms of numbers towards women. That's both in terms of users and providers. Although things are beginning to move towards a more balanced situation now. So, firstly, what's the situation in the group, Sarah? Are there many men? And do you think it could be a little bit daunting for a man to join a group?
There are more women than men. My group is actually women only. There was a man at the beginning. I don't know if it's daunting. I find the same, and I don't know if it's similar for you, Shafia, that with that asking for support anyway, it tends to be more women dominated than male. So I don't think it's specific. I think it's representative of the integrative cancer space, if you feel the same in that.
I definitely have a lot more women as mentors and mentees. Funnily enough, I think one of the men that came for the service, it wasn't him that applied. It was his daughter who filled out all his details,
right?
And said, "I'm his daughter, and I just think he really could do with some support, and so I'm filling in the form on his behalf."
That's right.
Which is interesting.
Something I haven't mentioned yet is obviously we have a carer group, and carer might be a word we're sort of working with. It's for relatives who are supporting somebody with cancer.
Right.
And like you say, Shafia, it can be a different family member that gets in touch and requesting support for the other person, which is something we're kind of working with as well at the moment to provide that support. But obviously it takes the individual to want to take that first step. So in short answer to your question, yes, we certainly have men in the group. There's one group online that's jointly run by a man.
Right. And so you've got any in particular thoughts about men's involvement? We all know that men, they're less likely to ask for support. And these two services are all about support, so it's highly likely you'd have less men. But, in my experience, it's not that men need support any less, it's just they don't ask for it. It's not the right thing to do as a man, it's not seen to be the right thing. You've got any thoughts about what we can do to change that, or whether you think it is a problem even, both in the group situation and the mentor situation?
I think it's the same, isn't it, with the whole men don't go to the doctors as often.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah,
they've got a problem, they leave it. I think, we're thinking about tone of voice in terms of how we can speak to a man who's going through that process. But it is challenging, isn't it? Because it the point of any action, whether we're taking action for our own health or action in terms of that reach out, comes onto that individual. So I don't know if that's more of a mainstream narrative in terms of men being able to take that step forward. I think a lot is being done in that area, and I am seeing change.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it is improving for sure, but plenty to go, let's say. Yeah, I mean, have you both got experiences where you'd be able to say what you felt that men had used your service had gained from it?
I have an example, actually. We had a facility
Excellent.
Meeting a couple of weeks ago, and one of the ladies who runs an online group, and she does run it with her male partner, and a man came to the group, and there was a different dynamic that week, she suggested. A few people weren't able to turn up. And I think because there were fewer of them there, he'd actually reached an emotional critical point in his journey. And he actually had quite an emotional experience within the group. And the facilitator was expressing that she found it incredibly powerful and profound, and they just really held space for him. And therefore the focus was for him in the group to just unleash whatever he was experiencing. And I think it was incredibly profound for him. I don't think he'd experienced something like that before. Interesting that the majority of the people there were women, and therefore that sort of feminine nurturing side enabled him to be able to do that. And I think that's an incredibly powerful thing. I think there can be a lot of fear in showing our vulnerability, enabling our emotions to release, and we don't actually know how to do it. It's almost like we just have to provide the space and the possibility for that to happen, and then it can happen. And then when somebody like this gentleman was able to experience that immense comfort that came from the experience of being held within that, I mean, he's then going to, obviously, it's not only going to help his journey, but he's going to be an incredible advocate for, oh my goodness, this is something that I may not have considered before. I may have felt resistance towards, and all of a sudden this has kind of helped me with one of my own health breakthroughs. And I think it is in the lived experience, but we have to put ourselves in a position of enabling a possibility to happen, for that to be able to happen. And I think the groups and the mentoring are a wonderful way and a wonderful provision to provide that for somebody to just go, do you know what, I'm just going to take a chance and see how this feels. You don't even have to sort of dig deep in too much into your vulnerability at that point. You just have to just be and see what happens. But yeah, that's incredibly powerful for him, and equally for the facilitator and the other group members to just be able to be there for him on that game. Very powerful.
Great story. Thank you. Shafi, do you have male mentors?
I don't have male mentors. But I have a couple of male mentees, and I'm in the at the point now where, because I obviously have to allow some time for the sessions to happen, and at least for, I think, 3-4 weeks before I can start asking for any feedback. But I'm starting to ask feedback from those who have been receiving the service for a bit longer. And so I think that when I'm able to share kind of case studies and stories and quotes from male beneficiaries, I'm hoping that that will kind of balance out, I guess, the number of men and women that are either receiving or participating in the service. It's interesting, actually, because I worked for many, many years ago. I worked with a prostate cancer charity.
Okay.
And this would have been in the kind of mid-noughties, I think. And at the time, their marketing was very much aimed at women. Because there was an understanding that men didn't seek support. And so they would target the women in their lives to try to get them to the GP and, you know, have the screening and all of this for prostate cancer. But I think maybe 10 years ago or 8 years ago, they had a complete rebrand where they were very much focused on trying to use imagery and stories to try to get men to participate in the screening services for prostate cancer. And I think it was a success. You know, I don't know what that is. Obviously, I'm not privy to that, but they decided that actually they were going to completely change and instead of and bypass the women completely in their lives and go straight to the men and try to find the language and tone and images that would allow them to do that. And my understanding is that that was a big success. So I think it's definitely worth, you know, looking at that, because I do remember how they did try to attract kind of people to use their services. So it would be good to see how it's changed, or at least to maybe have a conversation. I think if we wanted to delve into that more deeply, I think I would like to have a conversation with the Prostate Cancer UK to see, you know, what do they do, what kind of key learnings did they get from that kind of campaign where they targeted men very differently than they had done throughout their history.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago men didn't even know they had a prostate, let alone what it did. So, so things have changed. And also, they certainly never would have talked about it. And it's quite easily talked about these days in a way. You're quite likely to hear somebody chaffing about it on the radio or whatever. You know, it's not the taboo subject it was. So things are easing up, but there's an amazing weight of conditioning that all men are subject to, which is this, kind of stiff upper lip, you know, I don't need any help, I'll be all right thing. And it's a tragedy, really, it seems to me, because men need every bit of support when they're facing a horrendous diagnosis of cancer as women do. There's no difference, but they just don't ask, and therefore they don't get it. So I think spreading the good news that you have of, like, the people who've come to use your service and what it's done for them is an important thing, so that people can actually maybe pick up an interest in it for themselves. Okay, what do you think about the idea of men-only groups or women-only groups intentionally? Is that something that happens or you think might happen?
I've certainly considered the male-only group. I think if in terms of what we've been saying, is that would that be more attractive? I don't know either,
but
I need to ask, see how attractive that would be. It's certainly something that's popped into my head. I think the balance might be key within a group. For example, my own group became very sort of, it's all women. And therefore, if a man were to come in, I'm very conscious of that changing the dynamic. So with the groups that we currently have, I do feel like a bit of a guard keeper of, okay, who's going to work with whom within that group, because each group has its own dynamic. Interestingly, the in-person groups, I think, probably have more men in them than a crowd one, right? Because I suppose then that's based on locality, isn't it?
That, I think you're right. Yeah, probably there.
It's certainly something to consider, Robin.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting. It's just that there is this feeling, I think a lot of men will look at integrated medicine or particularly complementary medicine or whatever and just think, well, that's women's stuff, you know, straight away. And obviously, if you arrive at a group and it's for women, then that's kind of underlined the thing. So if it was actually specifically set up to target men, I can see that might be more attractive to some people, you know, to think, right, okay, this is for us, you know.
Yeah, it's really interesting. In the holistic health space generally, you know, I have my own clients with that, and people have advised me just target women because you're better, because you're sort of niching. And I'm like, well, no, I want to be there for everyone. And I have several male clients. And you're right, the support is very much needed and it's incredibly powerful. And I think even more so probably with men, because they've just not been exposed to that. You know, I am allowed to look after myself. I'm allowed to find my own answers. I don't have something specific that is like, you know, can draw and support men would be wonderful.
Mm. Okay, well, look, lastly and importantly, how do people find out more about both services?
Well, I mean, the peer-to-peer service is promoted regularly on the social media website. I think the local ambassadors will soon start dropping off leaflets near you.
Great.
and obviously our newsletter that goes out to our warm contacts. And for anybody watching, I would say to please share with your contacts widely and share on your own social media our posts so that we can get the word out more easily. People who need us.
Great, thanks.
Completely agree. We have contact forms on the website. It should be fairly intuitive to just click on groups, register, and you get an invite to meet in the next week, WAM Cafe, or we have a chat, and then decide how beneficiary would like to proceed, whether they're looking for an in-person group or online. Typically get people placed now within, you know, 2 to 4 weeks.
Fantastic. All right. Well, that's it. That's all we've got time for today. Thanks very much, both of you, for coming on the show and telling us about these Yes for Life services. I hope lots of listeners will be prompted to look into using one of them at least, or even maybe training to be a mentor or pioneering a new group. All of those would be fantastic. So thank you, Shafi and Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks, Robin.
Thanks.
See you soon.
Bye.
Do visit the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Scroll down the homepage and click the box that's linked to our services. And there you'll find links to the peer-to-peer scheme, Wigwam, and all the other services that we offer. Today's show has been about promoting Yes to Life services, so I thought I'd end with a promotion for a fundraiser for the charity. We have an album of music for children, and for parents who prefer something rather less grating than much of the music sold for kids these days. It's called Songs Our Parents Sang, and it's available from the Yes to Life online store, which you can find a link to right at the top of every page of the website. That's yestolife.org.uk. You can also read about the artist, Mirren, who's actually part of the Yes to Life team, at her website. That's mirren.com. M-Y-R-R-E-N.com. Mirren.com. As well as sample all the tracks. I'm going to end the show with Mirren's version of the classic Joni Mitchell song, The Circle Game. Thanks very much for listening. Do join me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.